You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Hey, proceed, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you.
He hasn't moved to admit yet.
Thank you. Ma'am, may I ask you to please look at the first picture that you have in your hand in front of you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Briefly, can you just describe for the record what you're looking at?
This is the back of Chad's house. And I'm looking at, in the forefront is an add-on to the original home that the kids would refer to as the cozy cone.
And may I ask, do you recognize that clearly as Chad's house?
Yes, I do.
If you were standing from the vantage point of that camera, would this accurately reflect a depiction of Chad's house?
Yes, it does.
You know, well, can I ask you to please turn to the next photograph? And please look at the back of the first one. And for the record, just note what the number is on the back, please.
Back of the first one, 420A.
Thank you. Now, as to the second photograph, why don't we start by referencing the number on the back of that, please?
This is 420B.
And on 420B, what do you see in that photograph?
Some musical instruments.
Where are the musical instruments at?
It appears to me up in...
Yeah, at this point, for just foundation, Mr. Wixon, we need to determine if these are coming in before we get testimony off of what they're showing.
Certainly. Ma'am, without referencing them, will you just take a quick look at the other two photographs attached?
Okay.
Again, without going into what they are, do you recognize those photographs?
Yes, I do.
And have you seen the rooms depicted in those photographs?
Yes.
Have you been in them before?
Yes.
Do they accurately depict the inside of Chad's home?
Yes.
Your Honor, at this time, we would move to admit states 420A through D.
Any objection? All right, and please turn your microphone on, Mr. Pryor.
Thank you, Judge. Daybell, the first picture shows a musical set. Do you know whose set musical set that is?
I can only assume. I don't know for sure.
So you've never seen that musical set in that room before, is that right?
I have seen musical instruments up in that room shortly after they moved in.
Okay, but did you see this musical set in that room? And did you actually see this picture?
I've never seen this picture until now.
Okay. Let's go to the next picture. Did you ever see that picture?
I have not seen this picture before.
Let's go to the third picture. Have you ever seen the third picture?
No, I haven't.
So what you are familiar with is, you described it as an add-on. Is that correct?
Yes.
This isn't part of the structure. It's attached to the garage. Is that correct?
Yes. My understanding is this cozy cone add-on is attached to the garage. It was added to the garage.
The back of the garage.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not part of the original structure of the home where to your knowledge, where the members of that household live, slept, and eat. Is that correct?
Judge, at this time, I'd object. This is going outside the purpose of a voir dire and aid.
Judge, I'm going to object to the admission of these exhibits.
Right. Response from the state. I'm just on admissibility, not on what they're showing.
Your Honor, at this time, this witness has indicated through testimony that she has been in this home more than once. She's already looked at the photos. She can recognize the photos. She said that they accurately depict what is contained in the photos. And I believe that sufficient foundation has been laid.
All right. The court's considered the objection. I am going to sustain the objection as it relates to exhibits B, C, and D. However, on exhibit A, I think adequate foundation was laid. So exhibit A is going to be admitted. The other three, the objection is sustained based on the testimony of the witness in the voir dire native objection.
You know, at this time, may I request to have exhibit 420A handed to me?
Yes.
Thank you. Your Honor, may I have permission to publish this to the jury at this time?
Yes, you may.
Yeah, I'd like to do that via the Elmo. Ma'am, I'd like you to go ahead and take a look at that screen, please. What do you see?
The back of Chad's home.
You've used the term cozy cove. Am I saying that right?
Cozy cone is how I understood it from his kids, yeah. Okay.
And what does that mean, cozy cone?
From my understanding, it was referencing the cones in Cars Land, Disneyland movie. They had cones they called cozy cones. That was my understanding. It was kind of their nickname for that part of the house.
And have there been occasions where you've been in the house and you've either been in or seen inside the cozy cone?
Yes.
So you're familiar with that?
Yes.
Could you describe what that cozy cone is, what the room's like, what it is?
From the time I went in it was, shortly after they moved in, they you go through the house, there's the garage and everything. It's towards the back. You turn and you go up some stairs to get to the upper room of that cozy cone.
Have you ever had opportunity to make observation of whether or what that room is used for?
At that time, my understanding, it was all those instruments were Chad's son, Mark's, that he's a musician, and those were, that's where he was keeping his instruments.
Based on personal knowledge only, what you know or don't know, did you ever have any other understanding of what that room may have been used for?
It was my understanding that once Garth moved to Rexburg, that was his room up there. That's what I was told.
Are you aware of any other purposes for that room?
No.
And I think you said you had to go up some stairs to access it?
You do, yes.
Were you familiar with where Tammy and Chad's bedroom were in that home?
Yeah, you'd go through the front door. They had a front living room, then just a hallway, and there were some bedrooms. I'm not exactly sure which bedroom was theirs, but their bedroom was down in the main part of the home.
So if you want to leave their bedroom and go to the cozy cone or vice versa, you'd have to go up or down some stairs?
Yes, you would.
Ma'am, Your Honor, I finished this exhibit.
All right, thank you.
Yes. Ma'am, going back to this meeting that you had with Chad right before they actually moved, reference to that time, it was in 2015, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a yes? Thank you. Were there any other interactions that you had with Chad and Tammy between that time and the time that Tammy passed?
Yeah, we would see them because they had moved into our neighborhood and our ward. They were in our ward at church, so I would see them typically once a week at church on Sunday.
And did you have interactions with him in the normal course at church?
I tried not to. So, but if I saw Tammy or the kids, I'd say hi, stop and see how they're doing.
Why were you trying not to?
Because I was upset at Chad for having moved his family into our ward when we specifically asked him not to do that.
I want to draw your attention now back to October of 2019. Do you recall learning of Tammy's death?
Yes, I do.
And where were you and how did you learn of her death?
Matt and I were at a work conference in Las Vegas, and we're in our hotel room the morning of October 19th when Matt got a phone call from his parents letting him know that Tammy had passed away. And they didn't know much, but they would call us when they had more information, but just letting us know she had passed.
How did you react to that information and that phone call?
I was very upset.
Other than just grief, was there anything else causing you to be upset?
Just not knowing what happened, having no information, and just she couldn't understand what would have happened.
So what did you do in reaction to that, being upset?
I called Chad myself.
When did you call him?
It would have been, I'm not sure, around maybe 9 or 10 in the morning. Matt had left for his conference. Chad picked up and I expressed my condolences and shock at hearing that Tammy had passed, and I just asked him what happened to her.
Would that have been 9 or 10 in the morning the same day?
Yes, on October 19th.
And can you please tell the jury how that call went? What did you first say and how did Chad respond?
So just expressing my sympathy and shock that Tammy had passed away, and asked him what had happened, if he could explain to me what had happened.
What did he say?
He said that Tammy had not been feeling well, that she, about 10 o'clock at night, started coughing pretty hard and then got to sleep. And then about midnight, she started coughing again hard enough that she vomited, got her settled down. And then he said at 6 in the morning, he'd slept from midnight to 6 in the morning, and woke up because the sheet that was on him had come off of him, and he heard a thud, and that woke him up. And he went to the other side of the bed and saw that Tammy had fallen off the bed, and he described her as she had died. She'd been gone for a little while because she was hard. And so he called to Tammy or to Garth to come in and help him get Tammy back on the bed.
How did you react to that explanation of things?
The whole time he was explaining that. It felt scripted to me, like maybe like it, he was reading it or something. It just felt very scripted. It was the word that came to my mind, and it made me feel very uneasy.
Did you say anything to him about that scripted feeling or anything else?
I did not. I asked him if he was going to have an autopsy done to find out why she had passed, and he said no, that a coroner had come and looked at Tammy and could clearly see that there was matter in her throat, that she, that that's why she had died, as she had coughed hard and thrown up, and that had caused her death. So there was no need for an autopsy.
And that was Chad's explanation to you. Sorry.
Yes, it was.
What else did you talk about in that conversation?
He informed me that the funeral would be in 2 days. And I said, well, Matt and I aren't even home. We're in Las Vegas. Can you wait so we can get home? Matt had another brother that was out of town as well, and just said, can you wait till we can all get home to be to the funeral? And he said, no, we're just going to get it done.
Did you say any follow-up in that conversation about that?
I said, okay, we will buzz back and get to the funeral.
And in fact, did you do that? Did you attend the funeral?
We did, yes.
And where was the funeral at?
The funeral was in Springville, Utah.
What observations did you make, if any, at the funeral?
The main thing I remember, it was the program was just Chad and his children, and the bishop spoke at the end. And the thing that stuck out was the opening song was Put Your Shoulder to the Wheel. I have never heard that song used at a funeral, so that seemed strange to me.
Related to that, at the time, were you serving a calling in the LDS Church?
I was. Yeah.
What was that calling you had?
A Stake Relief Society president.
Having had that calling, were funeral plans something you were familiar with?
Yes.
So you were familiar with typical LDS culture and how they might proceed with a funeral?
Yes.
Okay. Why was it so unusual to pick that song, Put Your Shoulder to the Wheel?
Because that song is describing put your shoulder to the wheel, push along, do your duty with a heart full of song. It's about working. It's just about work. So that was strange to me at a funeral.
Okay. Anything else that you observed at the funeral that concerned you or you thought may have been unusual?
Mm-hmm. Just watching Chad as he spoke, and maybe it's just the way that he cries, but it seemed like he'd turn it on and turn it off and turn it on and turn it off, the crying. So it, to me, came across as kind of disingenuous.
And anything else?
No.
And had you attended the viewing the night before?
I remember attending a viewing. I believe it was that morning. I'm not exactly sure on that. But did attend a viewing, yes.
Thank you. Did you notice anything unusual at the viewing or concerning?
Kind of just observing Chad and his children. Again, it was strange to me that Chad could be smiling and seeing people and smiling and seemed to be doing well and then crying all of a sudden. And it was a strange, his demeanor seemed strange to me.
Later, was there any kind of a luncheon that you attended?
Yeah. After the service, there was a luncheon. We all got there and Chad was late. That's what I remember from the luncheon is that we weren't sure where Chad was.
Why did his lateness stand out to you?
Because it's his own wife's luncheon for her funeral. So I assumed he would be there with everyone else.
Do you recall how late he was?
I don't recall how late he was. I just remember that his brother-in-law, Jason, stood up and said, we're just going to get started. Chad's not here yet, but we're going to get started.
When Chad did arrive, did you observe anything about his demeanor or behavior there?
It just seemed like a normal day. Like I wouldn't have guessed that he had just days previous lost his wife. He just didn't seem upset.
At that point, at that luncheon or later, did you have any further conversation with Chad about how Tammy had died?
Not at that point.
Did you at some point?
Yes, a few weeks later.
Can you explain first, when did that interaction occur and how did it occur? Was it in person, on the phone, those things?
It was on the phone.
About how long after the luncheon?
That would have been, I think, around in the middle of November, so 3 to 4 weeks after the funeral.
Why were you speaking to Chad on the phone for that occasion?
I had received a phone call from a member of our ward, Alice Gilbert.
Sustained.
Excluding any statements from other people besides Chad, why were you talking to Chad that day?
Because I had learned that he had gotten remarried and that his children were struggling and upset. So I reached out in a group text to his children and let them know that I was there for them if they needed me, that they were upset. And that resulted in Chad calling me.
And please explain to the jury how the conversation went between you and Chad at that point.
I answered. He said, "This is Chad." And he was upset with me and told me I had been a problem for him his whole life. And I asked him, "Who is this person you've married?" And he explained, "Her name was Lori. Would I like to meet her?" And I said, "No, I would not." And then I asked him what happened to Tammy. And he said she died of a pulmonary embolism because she had gained 40 pounds.
Now, earlier you've testified that you were seeing Tammy at least in church every week.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Had you observed a 40-pound weight gain in Tammy?
I don't generally keep track of people's weight gain or loss, but I had not noticed a big increase in weight gain on Tammy, no.
How did you react to that when he gave that explanation?
I remember being so flustered by that explanation because he had given me a different one weeks before that I was just upset. And he indicated to me, "I'm going to be living in Hawaii, so you don't have to worry about me anymore." And that was the end of the conversation.
Did you challenge him on the different explanations in that phone call?
I don't remember challenging him because I was so shocked by that I didn't challenge him on that.
Besides the different explanations as to Tammy's death, was there anything else that was shocking you in that conversation?
Just expressing to him, how can you get married this quickly after your wife has just passed away?
Did he give an answer to that?
He said that he'd met her about a year before, so he'd known her, and that she had lost a husband to a heart attack, and it just was, they were there for each other, and it just worked out that they'd get married.
You mentioned that one of the first things he said the phone call was to the effect of, "You've been a problem for me my whole life."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What did you take that to mean?
I said to him, "Your whole life?" I didn't understand what I had done to him his whole life, that he would consider me a problem.
Did he explain?
No.
And at that point, why was it that you told him that you didn't want to meet Lori?
Because I was upset that he had remarried weeks after Tammy's sudden passing. It seemed almost cruel for his children.
Anything else of note that you can remember that occurred in that conversation?
He did call me a pot stirrer. I remember that as well. Other than that, I think that's it.
He didn't explain what he meant by that.
I've been called that before by family members.
Pot stirrer.
Your Honor, given the time, this might be a normal place to break. I do have several other questions to get into with this witness.
Okay. We will go ahead and take our lunch recess at this time. We're right about noon, so we will try to resume at 1 o'clock. Thank you, everyone, for complying with the court's conduct order during the morning. We will continue on this afternoon after lunch.
Yeah. All right, please. All rise. If the court's again in session.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, if we're ready to continue, let's have the jurors brought back in, please.
Yes, Your Honor. All right, please. Conference account for, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Please be seated. All right, we concluded the lunch recess. We're back on the record on KCR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Witness Heather Daybell is on the stand in direct. I'll remind the witness that you're still under oath for your testimony. And Mr. Wixom, if you'd like to continue with direct, you may.
Thank you, Judge. Ma'am, just a quick check in. How is your throat and your surgery doing? Are you okay?
I'm doing okay, yeah. Just pardon my scratchy throat.
Okay. Let us know if you need to stop and take a drink or need any other rest, okay?
You appreciate it.
Thank you. Ma'am, we finished before lunch, and you were describing what I might call a strained relationship with the Daybell family?
Yes.
Okay. Would it be safe to say that strain has increased since the finding of J.J. Kiley on Chad's property?
Yes, I've not spoken to Chad's children since that time.
Now, I want to draw your attention to just a couple of weeks before Tammy passed. Do you recall whether or not Tammy had made a trip to go visit family in Utah?
Yes, I do recall that.
Was there anything about that trip that stood out to you as a concern?
Not so much a concern as that was abnormal. I understood that Tammy didn't like to travel alone, so I thought.
Judge, I'm going to object. I need some foundation as to where this knowledge is coming from.
Sustain.
Ma'am, what caused you to believe that Tammy didn't like to travel alone?
That's just what I had been told by other family members.
Judge, I'm going to object. There still needs to be some foundation.
We're happy to move on, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Do you recall, did Chad ever relay or claim that he'd had visions specific for Tammy?
Not directly to me.
So you never heard that from Chad himself?
I don't recall hearing from Chad anything about Tammy as far as visions, no.
Okay. Do you recall what spawned Tammy to make that trip to Utah?
Again, I didn't talk to Tammy about the trip.
Judge, I'm going to object at this point. That information would be by way of hearsay.
Sustained.
Your Honor, at this time, if I could ask to be handed State's proposed 420 B through D, which have not been admitted, if I could look at those, please, sir.
You may.
And Judge, can we have a sidebar, please?
Sure. The witness. Okay. If you could speak a little closer to your microphone when you talk, we're needing to pick that up on the record also. The court will note, just in a quick sidebar, we discussed previously offered exhibits B, C, and D of 420. So 420A was admitted, B, C, and D were not. At this point, I understand there's no objection to their admission from the defense. Is that correct, Mr. Pryor?
At this time, Judge, on B, C, and D, the defense is withdrawing its objection to the admissibility of those exhibits.
Okay. Does the state wish to offer those at this time then, Mr. Wixom?
We do, Your Honor.
All right. So exhibits 420, B, C, and D are all admitted.
Judge, at this time, I would request permission to publish those to the jury.
Yes, you may.
Ma'am, I'd like to call your attention to what is up on the screen. Can you look at that and explain what you believe that to be?
I believe that to be the staircase going from the downstairs of the home up into the cozy cone area.
And with respect to going up, when you say down into the home, down those stairs, is that the level where the bedrooms are located?
Yes, from my recollection, it goes down. There's a little hallway. It goes into the kitchen. And then the bedrooms are on the other side of the house.
For the record, that was State's 420D. Ma'am, I'm going to put up on the screen State's 420B as in boy. Can you let the jury know, what does that picture depict?
Musical instruments.
Where are they located?
There's not a lot of reference here other than a floor and a wall. So in context, the cozy cone loft is where they kept the musical instruments, as far as I was aware.
So is it fair to say that when you look at this photo, you're not trying to tell the jury that you have a specific memory of this? Is that correct?
I just know that that's where they would keep musical instruments, was up there.
Thank you. For the record, I'm placing on the screen now State's 420C. And what do you see in that photo?
A continuation. There's some musical, looks like musical. I don't know if that's a speaker or what that is, but it looks like it's the musical instruments as well.
And are you able to recognize where those musical instruments are or not?
again, just with that, the corner of that room in context of what we're looking at, the cozy cone, same carpet and everything.
And Your Honor, I'm done with these exhibits. Okay. Marshals, thank you. Ma'am, just a couple of more questions. Do you know the name David Hope?
Yes, I do.
How do you know that name?
David Hope is my daughter's father-in-law.
And who is David Hope besides being your daughter's father-in-law?
He is a retired detective for the Rexburg Police Department.
Okay. I want to ask, was he working for the Rexburg Police Department back in 2019?
Yes, he was.
Given that, did you ever withdraw that? How often, if at all, did you have interaction with David Hope for family type things?
Rarely. We've had a baby blessing a couple of years ago that we both attended. We went on a camping trip with a bunch of people several summers ago. I don't see him often.
Has there ever been an occasion where you have spoke to David Hope at all about Chad Daybell and the subsequent case that occurred?
I have not talked directly to Dave Hope about this case.
Have you ever attempted to indirectly get information to him about this case?
No.
And then my last line of questions. At some point, well, you've testified that you have been concerned about Chad's teachings, right?
Yes.
At some point, did you decide to send any kind of letter or document out to members of your stake?
I did. I sent a letter to the 10 Relief Society presidents of the stake.
For the jury's sake, can you kind of explain the relationship that a stake Relief Society president has with ward Relief Society presidents, please?
Yeah. As the stake Relief Society president, you're over in the stake. There were 10 different wards at the time. I am in charge of just keeping track of the Relief Society presidents, if they're doing okay, if they need any support, help. We plan meetings to carry out with them. So I would see them all periodically throughout the year.
Generally speaking, what did you put in that letter? Actually, let's withdraw that. To the best of your recollection, when did you send that letter out?
I have not looked at that letter for a long time, so my recollection is it was during the time period when JJ and Tylee were missing, and I believe Chad was in Hawaii at the time. So beginning of the year 2020.
And on that, how did you first learn about JJ and Tylee being missing?
I'd heard, and I've tried to remember, I can't remember exactly who told me, but that there was going to be, that there were two missing kids and we needed to be aware. So law enforcement, I don't remember, it's been a long time, but there were two missing kids and that it was going to be hitting the news. So all we were told is just to be aware that that was coming out, just kind of preparing us.
So back to the letter, what was the general subject or object of the letter that you sent out?
Well, again, I haven't read it for a long time, but it was basically because Chad was a relative of mine, you know, stick to the basics of the gospel, and because it appeared Chad had gotten off track. And I do remember putting in there that I had tried to say things to a few people, but I wasn't believed. And so I was having difficulty with that people had believed Chad at church and things, that he was doing everything as he should be doing, and that I was just trying to make things hard for him. So I had something like that I put in the letter.
What was your purpose in sending the letter out? What were you trying to accomplish?
I did have some Relief Society presidents reach out to me concerned that some of their ward members were involved in meetings with Chad and things. So it was as in a leadership position trying to, and as a family member saying, please just be wary of what's been going on.
So as you sit there, can you recall what kinds of things that you were telling people that you feel like you had not been believed on?
As things progressed and Chad got involved in this group preparing a people, I'd kind of follow that and listen to some of the people's experiences that he was associating with. So it was just a lot of trying to interpret dreams and claiming these people could see beyond the veil and just had extra abilities that the rest of us members of the church didn't have.
Do you recall who you were trying to share this with and who you were trying to warn about this?
I would mainly talk with, in the beginning, when I was still in the Ward Relief Society presidency, I would talk with that presidency, those women that I would meet with. And then as I was put in the stake, I did talk once or twice with our stake president. And it just as things progressed and I got more concerned, it was mainly, there were people in the ward, but I was mainly trying to talk to other family members to try to stop what was happening.
What was happening from your perspective?
I was just being told how this preparing of people and this prepping.
Judge, I'm going to object. There's no foundation and it's hearsay.
Sustained.
May I argue?
On that answer, it's sustained, Mr. Wixom.
Okay. Do you have any personal knowledge of things that were happening that was causing you to have those concerns?
I was hearing things about...
But I'm going to object. It's hearsay.
I'll ask a different question, Judge. Without referencing anything that anybody told you, can you explain the types of things that you'd learned about that were concerning you about what was happening?
Judge, it still constitutes hearsay unless there's some establishment of where the source of this information is coming from.
Judge...
Go ahead, Mr. Wixom.
Under 8033, it goes again to her state of mind. I'm asking her to explain her state of mind.
Judge, this has nothing to do with state of mind. This has everything to do with reciting what someone else may have told her.
Still, the way that question was asked, Mr. Wixom, I don't think 8033 gets around the hearsay issue, so you can continue with another question. It's sustained.
Thank you. So, ma'am, were you personally aware, that is, did you have knowledge, make observations, not hear from other people? Were you personally aware of any situations in your ward or stake that were occurring because of Chad's activity?
Again, through other people telling me what was...
Judge, I'm going to object.
We'll withdraw, Judge.
Okay.
Is it fair to say, Ms. Daybell, that as you sent that letter out and did make your efforts...
Judge, I'm going to object. This is leading.
Go ahead, Mr. Wixom.
Thank you. Is it fair to say that given you sending the letter out and making those efforts, that has come up at a cost to you and the rest of the Daybell family?
Judge, I'm going to object. Relevance.
Overruled.
Good answer.
There was initially, yes, there was a cost that I was just trying to create problems for Chad.
And I'll ask this question. Did those efforts caused damage to the relationship that you had with the rest of the Daybell family?
Yes, it did.
And is that damage part of the reasons why you no longer talk to his children?
Yes.
Is that your choice, or would you rather be able to talk to his children and to get along with the family?
Judge, I'm going to object. Relevance.
Sustained.
Your Honor, I have no further questions.
All right. Mr. Pryor, cross-examination.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Daybell.
Good afternoon.
You initially spoke to Police Officer Mattingly on about February 11th of 2020. Do you remember that?
I do. My memory is hazy because I had just had a surgery and I was still on pain medication. So I don't have as vivid memory of that.
Okay. Well, do you recall your husband was there as well, right?
Yes, he was.
Okay. So you remember that. Now, do you recall a discussion about concerns you had about Chad and using the Salem Church when you discussed that with Officer Mattingly?
I do recall having that concern that he was doing his writings inside the church building.
And you do recall that you told Officer Mattingly that the concern was that he, like you said, he was using the Salem Church every day. He was going there almost every single day to use it as a place where he could write his whatever he was writing, correct?
I don't recall saying every day, but I would notice his car there often as I had to drive by.
And when you say vehicle, you said car, but it was actually a black Dodge truck, was it not?
I recall more their other vehicle. Tammy drove the truck from my remembering more than Chad did.
Okay. Is that what you remember?
That is.
And what color was the vehicle that Tammy, that Chad was allegedly driving at this church that you would see?
It was a dark color.
Okay. You don't recall telling Officer Mattingly that it was a truck?
I don't recall that. And I remember Tammy driving the truck more than Chad driving the
truck. Now, you said that Chad started talking about these issues about visions and what you would consider unconventional beliefs. Is that, do you recall that in 2014?
Yes.
And yet he continued to maintain his membership within the LDS faith, right?
He did.
Okay. And Tammy continued to maintain her relationship within the LDS faith, correct?
Yes.
And even though he was writing these books, he was active in all of the meetings, the necessary callings that come as part of being a member of the LDS faith, correct?
Yes.
And in fact, on his particular ward up until 2019, he was a secretary or an undersecretary in a position within the church hierarchy, was he not?
Yeah, it's called executive secretary.
Executive secretary. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And that position would be the position in Fremont County underneath a, and you're going to need to correct me, okay, underneath a bishop of a ward, right?
Yes, technically that's part of the bishopric, the executive secretary.
The bishopric.
Which includes the bishop, the two counselors.
Okay, so he was a counselor, and a bishop in your faith is someone who has somewhat of a position of prominence. Would that be fair?
Essentially, the priesthood leader of the ward, yes.
The what leader?
Priesthood leader.
Priesthood leader of the ward. So when a ward is, again, a ward is a geographic area, and in Fremont County, it would be a specific geographic area, like the Salem area has a ward over there somewhere?
Correct.
And then they have a bishop?
Yes.
And that's the priesthood leader of that geographic area?
Yes.
And through 2019, Chad Daybell, as a member of the LDS Church, was the executive secretary for that bishop, correct?
Yes, he was.
Okay. And that was in spite of the fact that he'd been writing books for 10, 12 years, right?
The books that he had written at that point were not an issue.
Okay. So in 2014, the books became an issue. Is that right?
No. In 2014, Julie Rowe's book became the issue that he was publishing.
Okay. And we're moving to an area that I intended to go into because Julie Rowe was one of these people who went around the, in particular, like three particular states, and she preached about preparing the people. Would that be fair?
You could use that phrase. She was not associated with preparing the people, the group.
Right.
The people. But yes, that was the purpose of what her books were, to prepare people for what was coming.
Okay. And she spoke primarily to people of the LDS faith. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
In fact, she would put on these conferences and her primary audience were people who were, who shared that the LDS faith, correct?
Correct.
So was she somehow looked down upon because she was doing this?
By someone such as myself who didn't agree with her book, but there were quite a few people in Rexburg who were listening.
And she was filling conference halls, giving her speeches, was she not?
She filled the tabernacle in Rexburg, yes.
Okay, and
It's a conference type center. Yes.
Okay. You guessed what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So the tabernacle, that's a big building in Rexburg.
It seats around 2,000 maybe.
Okay. So she was going around preaching to primarily LDS folks about this preparing the people stuff. And she was filling tabernacles.
As far as I knew. Yes.
And filling other stadiums around people who were primarily members of the LDS faith. Would that be fair?
I don't know if stadiums, but I was aware of the tabernacle in Rexburg, yeah.
Okay, okay. And then at some point, Chad met her and he helped publish one of her books. Do you recall that?
My understanding from what he told me was that he reached out to her on a website called Avow.
Okay. Do you know what that avow thing is? We brought that up before, and then the other witness didn't really understand it. Can you tell me a little bit about avow?
I never was on it. So okay. From my understanding, it's just a website with like-minded people that have visions and dreams, and they share those experiences, kind of a prepping type of site.
And again, that avow organization, the little I know about that is again, catered to people of the LDS faith. Is that correct?
From my understanding, I've not been on it, but from my understanding, mainly LDS people.
Okay. So this idea of people who have visions and people who can make predictions about certain things, the organization's called Avow, right?
The website's called Avow. Yeah.
And that they would, again, along with Julie Rowe and these people from Avow, would cater predominantly to the people of the LDS faith.
I believe so.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Would it be fair to say that your husband and Chad did not have a very particularly close relationship?
I wouldn't label it that before 2014. Again, we lived in a different state, but I thought they had a good relationship.
So when you were interviewed by Officer Mattingly, and there was a mention of the fact that Chad and Matt were not particularly close, were you basing that on after they moved here, after the Daybells moved here, or was that reference to just in general?
Because that's several years ago, and I'm not exactly, I don't recall completely. I would say that prior to 2014, it was a normal relationship. It was after 2014 that it became more difficult.
And did I understand your testimony correctly that when Chad and his family decided to move here, your concern was, your last name's Daybell, right?
Correct.
And the concern is that if Chad moved here and he continued to talk about these preparing the people beliefs and writing his books, that somehow would have an impact on necessarily how your family would be perceived. Would that be fair?
I was concerned, yes, because he had chosen to buy a home in such close proximity to our home and had talked about our land being part of this, whatever was coming. So I just was worried he was going to be expressing that to other people when Matt and I were not in agreement.
Okay. And so you're standing in the community because you did hold a prominent position within the LDS faith at one time. Is that right?
I have been in several leadership positions. When Chad moved into Rexburg, I was, I don't remember when I was called as into the Relief Society presidency.
Okay. Would you mind if I said you're the Stake Relief Society president? Does that sound like what
that
you were?
I got that call in 2018.
Okay. And as part of that call, and again, correct me if I misstate something, okay, please? Mm-hmm. As a State Relief Society president, Stake, STAKE, not state, right?
Correct.
And a stake is basically a bunch of wards that make up a stake.
Correct.
In other words, there could be 10, 15 wards that make up a stake area, correct?
Correct.
And you were overseeing something called the Henry's Fork Stake. Is that what you were involved in?
Yes, that's the name of that stake.
And in that Henry's Fork Stake, there are, is it 2,000 or 3,000 people or families?
I'm not sure. I just know that there were 10 wards. So, and there's typically 200 to 300 per ward, depending on the ward.
Is that families or is that people in each ward?
I would say people.
200 to 300 people in each ward?
I was only over the women and the presidents of the Relief Society, so I didn't keep count of
the number of women, families.
I was mainly in charge of the 10 Relief Society presidents and their teaching of their sisters that they were over.
So the 10 Relief Society were the people that were overseeing the individual wards and you oversaw them, right?
Yes, correct.
So you were the head of the stake with these 10 women who were in charge of each of the individual wards.
Yes.
So you had all of their email addresses to communicate with them. Would that be fair?
Yes, I did have access to everyone's emails.
And if I understand the way the hierarchy works, and again, correct me if I make a mistake, this is all new to me. When you're trying to communicate with the people within your stake, the process would be you would send an email out to the individual ward, the society ward presidents, and they would in turn send it out to their individual members within their wards.
Correct.
So they know that, and you carried a position of authority here. Let's not kid around. You were in a relatively strong position of authority, right?
I wouldn't use authority, but yes, I was in a position over it for the stake.
And then, of that stake, there's a president of the stake. That's a male position, or that's assigned to a male member of the
stake. President, yes, yeah. Is male.
And the president of that stake, the Henry's Fork stake back in 2019, 2020, would be who?
Judge, at this point, I would object as to the relevance of this line of questioning.
Sustained.
Okay. Do you have a distinct recollection of the email that you sent out to the individual ward president, the high society ward presidents? Do you have a clear recollection of what was in that letter?
Again, I haven't read that letter for several years, so okay.
Would it be helpful if I provided you a copy of the letter that you could read for me to refresh your recollection? Then we could talk about that.
Sure.
Mr. Bailiff, and I want to warn you that I'm computer illiterate, so it's on double page. So it's on one page, back page, 3, 4, okay? And take your time to read that if you would for me, please.
Thank you.
And counsel, I'm not going to be moving to admit. And then again, if you would, it's 1 and 2 are on the same piece of paper. And just let me know when you're done reading it, if you would.
You want me to read the entire
thing? I don't want you to read it out loud. I want you to read it. And then when you're done reading it, just set it down or the bailiff will take it. And then I'll take it back and we'll just talk about it a little bit.
I'm sorry. I don't have my reading glasses.
And I don't either. So if I can get some, I'd get them to you. Judge, can we take a break and let her get her reading glasses?
Do you have those here with you somewhere?
They're in my purse in the room that I was in.
Okay.
Pink purse with a green case with my glasses in it.
Well, we'll just have you, maybe let's go ahead and have a stand-up break here for the jurors as well. We won't call this full break, but if the jurors want to just file back into the hall and stand here for a minute, we'll get that taken care of and give her time to refresh her recollection, and then we will come back on without a full break.
Judge, can I move to my
you may.
All right, great.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.